All right. Now that is a proper hype man, don't you think? You should get paid for that. You guys, this is awesome. I'm so excited to be here with you. Thank you for narrowing up a little bit too. It's kind of a challenge to keep like somebody that far away interested and someone that far away interested. So this way, hopefully we can all stay engaged. So the title of this is Generation Dopamine. I don't know if you guys have heard of what dopamine is. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about our brains today, all right? Our beautiful big brains. Does everyone have a beautiful big brain? Okay. But first, we're going to talk about how our brain fails us sometimes. Now, this might just be me, but have you guys ever had just like your brain just totally give up and like fail you completely? Like there was one time we were camping a few years ago, and we were going to make some eggs. And so I couldn't think of the word that I wanted. And it was like, skillet, is it a skillet or is it a griddle? And so I said, hey, can you guys get the Skittles for me? And everyone looked at me like, what are you talking about? We're trying to make breakfast. It's not candy time. And I'm like, no, the Skittles. And I like my brain would not register that I had totally screwed up the word completely. It took a long time. But I want to tell you guys a story of when, a time when my brain like truly, truly gave up on me and failed. So already the oh no's, you don't even know what the story is. All right. So years ago, my oldest daughter, who's now 18 and off traveling the world, she was about 4 or 5. You know, she was pretty young. We lived in Tennessee, and we had this beautiful this beautiful yard in the back. It was grass, and then behind that was like this forest. And so the kids loved to go out there and play. And one year we found a play set that we stood up in the back. So it was like this massive erected set with like a fort in the top and like swings and monkey bars and all of the stuff. You guys envisioning it with me? So Zoe, being the person she is, loved to go out and just play on this set. So the problem was, if you climbed up into the fort in the top, there was a spot that you could go out onto the monkey bars across, and it was like a good 8-9 feet in the air. Like it was not a 4-year-old, if someone's doing that, that was not 6-7, that was 8-9, come on. Okay, so it was much higher than a 4-year-old should be doing. And she was insistent, and she always wanted to do it. And so I would try to be there anytime that she was going to go out onto these monkey bars because she couldn't hold on long enough to cross and she would let go and I'd catch her. So one day, we're outside, we're working in the yard, we're trying to mow the lawn and do all the stuff. I have the lawn mower, I'm in the front and I'm mowing the lawn, and Zoe snuck away from us. Like we didn't realize that she had gone over to the playset. So you guys know where this is going, right? So she climbs up. And before we could do anything about it, she swings out onto these monkey bars, and she slips off. And now, I wish she had slipped off in a normal way, but she slipped off. She had kind of swung and swung back, and then her hand slipped off. So now she's looking straight down in the ground. So she plummets to the ground, catches herself, but not enough. Her head slams into the ground so much that it impacts dirt into her teeth. So, like, she hits hard, and she catches herself. And so I'm mowing the lawn, and my wife, Elizabeth, comes around, running around, and says, Nephi, and she's got Zoe, and she's picking dirt out of Zoe's teeth and trying to, like, get her to, so she can breathe, and we look down, and her arm is no longer an arm. It's like, instead of a straight arm, it's now like an L. So have you guys broken your arm like that? Like you get the couple of you, like it's just nasty, right? The arm turns away. And I didn't put any pictures of that. I probably should have to gross you out a little bit. But I didn't. So now dad mode goes into like emergency dad mode goes into effect. Now you guys, something you'll eventually realize is emergency dad mode is not a mode you want to be in very often. Because we only had 2 kids at that time. This is the first major injury we'd ever had. I was freaking out. Her arm is twisted to the side. She's crying like crazy, and I don't know exactly what to do. So immediately I grab her, and we know we have to go to the doctor. So I run, and I take her into the garage, and I put her in the back seat. Elizabeth sits down with her in the back seat, and I don't even buckle her in because I can't get her arm into the seat, right? Because to grab her arm and push it through that strap was so painful that she was just screaming. And so now she's in the seat. I jump in the front of the car. I throw it into reverse. And I back up. And immediately I hear a... And Elizabeth said, "What was that?" And I said, "I don't know." And she said, "Did you move the lawnmower?" And I said, "What lawnmower?" And so I get out. And I'm running back to get the lawnmower. And so I jump out of the car. And before I do, I put it from reverse into park. Or so I thought. So I jumped out of the car. And I'm running back to move the lawnmower. And Elizabeth is like, wait. And I turn and I look. And now the car is backing out of the garage by itself with Elizabeth and Zoe in the back. Now, it wouldn't be so bad except coming out of the garage just over a little farther, about this distance behind that, there's a drop-off, like a six-foot drop-off. So if the car goes off, like now the car's stuck and Zoe gets thrown in the air. So again, I'm still in dad mode, right? Like my brain is not working the way it should be working. First of all, I have no idea why a car in park is moving, but it was. And so I run and I jump into the car and I'm trying to slam on the brakes with my arms to try to get it. Now it's still backing out of the garage, right? And I'm hanging out of the car and the door is open and it's backing out of the garage. And it's backing out, and the door is open. And the door is open. So as it backs out of the garage, and I try to stop it, the door catches on the side of the garage and goes, and goes the exact opposite direction that it should go. I finally get the car stopped. We didn't go off the edge. Now I'm like, what do I do? Like, my door is bent the wrong direction. And so I back it out of the garage, and I take that door, and I just, in all my dad anger, I'm just like, boom, I just slam the thing and I kick it as hard as I possibly can and it shuts. I'm like, okay. So I run around and I get into the car, put it in reverse again, back up, and we go to the hospital. All right, so my brain totally failed me. Have you guys ever had a brain failure? Just totally gives up on you. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about that today. The brain is amazing. It's designed to do incredible things, but sometimes... The brain can fail us just a little bit. And unfortunately, there are people that take advantage of those brain failures. So to get going, I want to introduce you guys to Krug. Krug the caveman. So AI helped me create Krug. And Krug's just a normal caveman. He's, you know, living his life, trying to survive. And I love the movie The Croods. You guys remember The Croods? Some of you? So like in the beginning, like, well, we had these friends. And then they... died, right? Like, and he just slams his hand and everybody dies except the Croods. Well, Krug is just out there trying to survive. And so one day, Krug goes out hunting and comes upon this creature he's never met before and thinks to himself, I'm hungry. Let's have some food. And so he tries to get the saber-toothed tiger. And that, of course, doesn't go so well. So Krug is now chased away from the saber-toothed tiger. And that was not an enjoyable experience. But Krug's still hungry. He hasn't had any food. And so the next day he goes out hunting again. And this time he comes upon a nice, beautiful buck. And he gets it. And he has some food. Now, Krug's brain at this point, he starts to eat this juicy, delicious steak. And something happens in his brain that starts to say, wow, that was a great experience. And so his brain started to train him that, hey, chasing a saber-toothed tiger is not a great experience, but chasing a deer and eating a juicy steak is a good experience. And we call that process dopamine. Dopamine is a chemical that's released by our brain. So this is a nice, beautiful, this little part right here, this ventral tegmental, now we're going to get scientific. You guys okay with that? My wife's like, don't get scientific. You're going to lose them. I'm like, no. You guys can handle it. Can you handle it?
Yeah.
Okay. It's not really scientific. I'm not a neuroscientist, but we're going to go a little bit. So this little area right here puts out just a little bit of chemical called dopamine. That dopamine tells Krug, ooh, that steak was delicious. We want steak again. Okay. Have you guys ever felt that dopamine release in your brain for certain things? Ooh, that was good. I want to do that again. All right. So that's a natural process. It taught Krug that he wanted to eat steak. And the absence of it taught him not to chase saber-toothed tigers, right? And so we have this process in our brains that tell us that these things are good and we want to do those things again, And then these things are maybe not as good, so maybe they don't have the reward, and we can avoid those things. And so a natural dopamine process is something happens, we get some dopamine, and then our brain says, okay, that's enough. And it sends out these little receptors that come in, and they uptake all the dopamine, and it drops down. Now, you'll notice that when the dopamine comes down, it drops lower than the original baseline. And that's intentional, right? Because that absence of dopamine trains our brain to say, oh, this was really good, this was not so good, now I want to do that thing again. So this is a normal dopamine release cycle. All right? Stick with me. We still have more science. Unfortunately, as time has gone on, we've introduced these additional substances and additional things that don't look like dopamine, normal dopamine processes. So down here, this is the dopamine release of food. Okay, so that's fairly normal. Comes up and it slowly releases, and it over a few hours, then eventually it'll drop back down. That's normal. Have you guys ever had a really delicious meal and you've had this dopamine experience? Yeah? Steak? What's your favorite? Steak? Steak lovers out there? Sushi lovers? Sushi lovers? Okay. Anybody? Italian? We were in Rome a couple weeks ago. Italian lovers? Yeah? Pizza? Yeah, all right. So that's what happens when you have that nice steak, that wonderful pasta, or that piece of pizza. A little spike, and it rolls off. Now, unfortunately, the other things that we use, so I'm not using amphetamines. I'm not saying we use, but I'm saying what some people use are these other things. Now look at amphetamines. So here's food and here's amphetamines. Look how high that spike is. So when you take that, so it's no wonder, right, that we get addicted to these things, because look how much dopamine is released in that process. And then it spikes down and goes away. Here's cocaine. Here's smoking, nicotine. And here's pornography. Something really interesting about the pornography line. It's a little bit different. What do you guys notice that's different in that line? It goes almost as high as cocaine, and it doesn't come down. It just stays for a long, long, long time. That's why pornography can be so destructive, is because of this dopamine release is ongoing for a really, really long time. It spikes high and stays for a really long time. Okay, so what happens then When we are exposed to these types of these chemicals or these other experiences that spike our dopamine so high, is we get this huge high, and then eventually it comes down and it goes below that baseline, and it actually shifts our baseline down. So when we have too much dopamine and it continues sitting in your brain, so like with pornography, sits there a long time, it actually moves this baseline. So what does that mean? The next time you have that, the same amount of substance doesn't give you the same experience. And so we're still chasing, our body still wants this, but it's only getting this. So then what do we have to do? We need more of it, right? So we have to do more, we have to take more, we have to have more of those experiences. And over time, you see how this baseline shifts. So a good way of imagining this, you guys, is, have you guys ever had an experience where, has anybody ever eaten an entire pizza by themselves? Yeah. Raise your hand if you've, okay. Oh, I've got some, like a full, like large pizza? Hands up. Oh, I've still got some hands up. I love it. Okay, so walk through this process with me of eating this giant pizza, right? The first bite. Oh man, that was so good, right? That first slice of pizza, it's cheesy, it's warm, it's delicious, it's amazing. I love the dopamine release. Okay, then I get my next bite. Is the second piece of pizza as good?
No.
It is for me, but the second and third usually are still pretty good. But by the fourth piece of pizza, how are you feeling? Are you wanting to eat that pizza? What about the sixth pizza? By the time you're eating that last piece of pizza is kind of a hard thing to say, I just realized. That last piece of pizza, you guys are all, it's like way down here, and it's not the same. That's the experience that we get with all of these different things that release dopamine into our brain. All right. So the cycle, we become addicted to things because we get this action that gives us pleasure. And then the dopamine wears off and we want some more and we have to have more, and then we get that increased stimulation. And it's just this cycle over and over and over. But here's something else interesting about dopamine. And this will be the last kind of scientific part, and then we'll move on. Are we okay? We're still good?
Yeah.
Okay. There were some researchers that were studying dopamine, and they were realizing that they hypothesized that dopamine acted in two ways in this process. One of them, which we just talked about, which is you eat the pizza and it gives you that high. The other one was interesting. So what they did was they took a group of monkeys and they put them into a room, and there was a button in front of them. And there was a light that would flash, and then they waited. And if the monkeys pressed the button 10 times, a treat would appear. And so they sat there and they watched the monkeys. The light would go off, they would wait, and then the monkeys would push it. If they pushed it 10 times exactly, a treat would appear. And the monkeys started to figure that out. And as they were doing that, they were measuring the amount of dopamine that was being released into their body, into their brain. And so here's what they found. This was when the light went off. And this is when they actually started pushing the button. And this is when they got the treat. Now, what's interesting about that? When did all of the dopamine get released? Before they pushed the button, right? So the dopamine release was actually, the light went off, the dopamine was released, and they started anticipating. They started thinking about. And that was when the dopamine came. And then as they started to do the work, the dopamine actually came down, and then they got the reward. So this is interesting because think about it for a second, and maybe you guys have felt this before. How many of you guys have like devices or cell phones? Hands up. Okay. Have any of you ever had your cell phone and you know that no one has texted you, you know that no one has communicated with you, and maybe it's even sitting somewhere, but you think about your phone and then you think to yourself, oh, I should check my messages. Anybody? Or, oh, I should go look at something. And you grab your phone and you automatically flip to this whatever thing, even though you know that nobody has texted you. That's this dopamine release that we're talking about. Another one, anybody ever get phantom texts? So it's in your pocket and it's supposed to vibrate and you think that it vibrated and you're like, oh, dude, somebody just got a hold of me. Oh, never mind. Like that was just a phantom one. So again, that's that dopamine release, right? It's the preemptive dopamine. Okay. Are we good with the science? Do we kind of understand how the dopamine works?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you see any problems in that process in modern times? Okay. So now we take Krug. So Krug the caveman, when he ate the steak, got a normal release of dopamine. It was wonderful. Krug the caveman, when he was with his family, had a normal dopamine release, and it was wonderful. But now you take Krug, and you put a device in his hand, and then what starts happening to the dopamine release over time? It's no longer normal, right? And even more problematic, it becomes a constant dopamine release. That's the problem that we're getting into as a civilization. It's not the fact that certain things release dopamine. It's not the fact that our devices give us a little dopamine hit. That's totally fine. The problem is, and you guys may feel this, we almost never get out of the dopamine because we have dopamine from our device constantly. We have dopamine in all of the other things that we're doing. And so our baseline of dopamine is like this constant high level that never comes down, and our baseline is shifted. And that causes giant problems, okay? So as we have these devices, we get a ding. As soon as your device dings, what happens with your dopamine? It immediately spikes, right? It spikes in anticipation. Then you go get your phone, and then you do something on your phone that gives you more dopamine. And then you're not with your phone and you think, man, I really want my phone. And then it dings and the process starts over. How many of you guys are familiar with this? Okay. Prodigy. So
I have no problem with video games to teach us educational concepts. But now that you know a little bit more about the brain, what could you see as being problematic about this?
Be addicted.
You want to play it over and over.
So we've taken something, education, that has a normal amount of dopamine release, and what have we done? We've spiked the dopamine. When you guys play this game and learn math concepts, it's great to learn math concepts, but you have to recognize the dopamine release of this is significantly different than if you're learning math in a different way, in a more quote-unquote boring way, right? Why do we love this? It's not because we love learning math even more when it's in a video game. It's because we love the video game. And we love the dopamine that gets released when we play the video game. And so our world has taken all of these normal things, you guys, and they've interwoven them with this process, this natural process. Now, there are many people in this world that will take advantage of this, and they'll take advantage of you as a result. So just a couple of examples. It's not a coincidence that on your phone and social media, how do you go from one thing to the next in social media? What's the process to get from like one video to the next? What do you have to do? You swipe, right? Which way do you swipe? Up or down? Okay. About 25 years ago, there was a research study that evaluated the process of novelty in our brains, and that our brains want new things. And when we think of getting a new thing, it spikes our dopamine. And it's especially effective if someone makes a motion to get to the new thing. And when you do that, it causes this addictive behavior. And so when device makers figured that out, what do? They put it directly into the thing that we have. And here's the interesting thing. Does every video that you swipe through, is it what you want to see? Is it interesting? Did you know that they do that on purpose too? Because when you get an uninteresting one, then it spikes your dopamine in anticipation of a good one. If it was only good videos that you always liked, it would not be the same dopamine release. So all of these things that they build into our devices, the way that we interact with them, the way that the things appear to us, the algorithm itself is designed to give us the exact thing that's going to spike our dopamine the most. They want an emotional response from us, and when they get that, then that's the type of stuff they'll feed us over and over. And so this entire industry, you guys, of devices, the education stuff we just looked at, how many of you guys do Duolingo? I love Duolingo. It's like this great way of teaching us. But guess what? When you hear that distinctive ding or that distinctive sound from Duolingo, what's the intention of that? Why does Duolingo put that in there? Because they want to spike your dopamine. They want you to be like, oh, I haven't done my Duolingo. Like someone else is doing their Duolingo and that sound comes off. You're like, oh, I didn't do my Duolingo today. Anybody ever have that experience? Right? So they're just playing off of this process to take advantage of us. Now, there are good things in that. I'm not saying that all dopamine is bad. In fact, I'm saying the exact opposite. Dopamine is wonderful and it teaches our brains to focus on good things and not avoid to avoid the bad things. However, being at a constant state of high dopamine, you know, the worst case leads to addiction. And I don't really think most of us are too addicted right now. Any alcoholics in here? Alcoholic Anonymous? Okay. I think we're okay on that side of things. But in a very real sense, let's go back to Krug. So Krug, somebody came out of time and gave him an iPhone for 3 days, and it was awesome, but then they left and they took the iPhone with him. Now how does Krug feel? So think about your lives for just a second. When you don't have those things in front of you that cause the dopamine spike, what happens in our lives? What's that? It's just a little, it's not quite the same, right? It's just a little like, oh, what's missing? Like, well, I feel like something's not here. And that is that withdrawal of the dopamine, right? It's that low that we saw in the things before. All right, so but all's not lost. So any questions that you guys have about that process or about how it's being used against you? Like, is it clear what we're talking about here? How do you guys feel when you know that people are taking advantage of you with that process? Thumbs down. Okay. Honestly, we should feel a little bit more like that. And instead of giving them all of our money, we should really be thinking a little bit more like, why are you trying to destroy our lives? Because that's exactly what it's doing. It's leading to this life that feels like it's just not as good. And it's causing all kinds of problems in the world because of that. So I want to spend just the next few minutes and kind of as we go towards the end of this thing, I want to speak on what can we do to try to fix it. Okay. Number one, luckily, the process of lowering your dopamine down to a normal baseline is fairly straightforward. What do you think it looks like?
Not being on your devices as much.
Yeah, getting away from whatever's causing the dopamine, right? Here's something really fascinating. For most of the dopamine things that you guys are involved in with devices and other things, if you will stop using them for 1 week, you will significantly reset your baseline. It takes 1 to 2 weeks to reset that dopamine baseline. Now, most of us think, oh, it would take, I'd have to not use my device for like years. No, you can actually reset it in just a couple of weeks. So a simple like goal of, hey, I'm not going to do this thing for 2 weeks will actually help to reset that dopamine. Now, we should take a lot of encouragement from that, that it can be so simple as just not doing that thing for a short period of time. Okay? And so if I was someone that you listen to, which I know I'm not, but if I was someone you'd listen to, I suggest in the next few weeks you give yourself a challenge of cutting out devices and cutting out these dopamine things to just reset your baseline. It has nothing to do with the device or what you're doing. It's all about just getting your brain back to a baseline. And then once it's at that baseline, you can start adding things back in slowly, but doing it in a controlled way, understanding that I'm not going to let the device control my dopamine release. I'm going to control it myself. So that's number one. I suggest a reset for all of us. We could all use a reset in some way. All right, number two. When I was young, I grew up in a little town in Moab, Utah, down in southern Utah. And it's a beautiful place with red rocks and mountains and all kinds of things. This is, my house is, if you went down this way and kept going to about here, my house is out here somewhere. This is called Johnson's Up on Top. And it's this awesome place. So as I was growing up in the, I'm going to age myself now. So I was born in 1980. So 80s and 90s was kind of my era. And in the 80s, when I was six or seven, all right. When I was six, my older brother was eight and my younger brother would have been four or five. And we would just go outside. Like our lives were, we lived in the middle of nowhere. The closest house to us was my grandma who was right next door. And then beyond that, it was like 5 miles away. And there was no way to get to them. So it was us. So me and my two brothers, we would just go out into the desert and just enjoy our life. So in the morning time, we would leave. Nighttime, we would come back. That type of a life. So one day, my brothers and I, so remember, it's 8, 6, and 4. We're like, dude, we should go up and get on Johnson's Up on Top. And if we walk across the top, we can walk all the way to the lake that's up the other end. Now, you know, I'm a six-year-old kid. I think I can do anything, right? So we start. We're like, yeah, let's do it. Well, what do you think we'll need? We'll probably need a sandwich. All right, we get a sandwich. All right, maybe we should put like a little water bottle in there just in case. We're like, all right, let's get a water bottle. And so we head out. We get up in the morning and we're like, Mom, we're going to go up on Johnson's Up on Top. And she's like, are you sure? We're like, yeah, we're going. Like, all right, just be back. It's the 80s, guys. Like, moms are like, yeah, go ahead. So we take out and we make our way up this road that leads up to the top of Johnson's Up on Top. We get to the top and it's way, way farther than we thought it was going to be. So we started probably like 8 in the morning. It's now like almost noon. So we've been like 4 hours to try to get up to the top of this thing. And it was hot. It's like 100 and by noon, it's probably 105 degrees outside. It was middle of summer. And so we're sweating and we're just like, dude, this is so awesome. We're having such a great time.
And my littlest brother's like, I don't know, guys, maybe we should go back. We're like, dude, you're such a whip, let's do it. And so we start hiking across Johnson's Up on top. And it's a long, like it's miles and miles to hike across the top of this thing to get to where we think we're gonna go to the lake. So we hike all the way out there. It's now like 3 p.m. We get to the end of Johnson's Up on top and we're like, we can see the lake. It's like right down below us. And like, but it's like 1,000 feet down below us. And there's like these giant cliffs. We're like, oh, I guess we can't go to the lake. All right, we better go home. So we turn around and we start walking back. And by this time, that little ball of water is completely gone, right? Like it's just completely gone. We fought about the sandwich 3 hours ago. Like we've got nothing. And we've got a long, long ways to go. And so we're starting to feel dehydrated. We're starting to feel tired. It's a struggle. And so we get back a little ways and we're like, if we just, because there's a road. If we go back and we come down the road, we can go right back to our house. But my, I can't remember who it was. It was probably me. I'm like, if we just like go off the edge here, we could like make our way right to the house. We could just see it. And my brother's like, yeah, this is a good idea. We should do that. And so we go off the edge and we start following this creek down into the thing. And we're just like winding down through these red rocks, which was amazing until we get to our first waterfall. And it's a dry waterfall at this time. It's not running the running water, but it's a good 30-foot drop. It's a great place if you ever want to do canyoneering, like to have ropes and actually go down this thing. It would be unbelievable. But we get to this place, we're like, oh crap, what do we do now? And so we try to like make our way around and we eventually find our way around that one. And we go a little farther and then we hit another waterfall. You guys are going to start seeing a pattern here. And so we go around and eventually we get to a waterfall we cannot get around. Like, crap, now what do we do? My little brother's crying because he's just done. He's 4. And we've been out all day in the 100-degree weather with one sandwich and a bottle of water. So we're like, we're going to die up here. Like, let's leave Justin and we'll just come back for his body later, right? Like, we're totally done. So we make another executive decision. We're like, okay, let's go back to the top and we'll go back to the road. So we go back to the top. It's starting to get dark at this point. It's late, late in the night. And we're like, man, I don't know. Maybe we should just camp. That was like one of our suggestions. Like, yeah, we can start a fire. Like, I'm 6. I know how to start a fire. Like, what are we gonna start a fire with? We're rubbing sticks together. And so we're like, what do we do? And so we start. Like, we just gotta keep going. And we're all crying at this point. We're all just dehydrated. We're tired. We just don't think we're gonna make it back. But we do. We keep coming down. And we get down a little ways, and we look down, and we see headlights coming up. And we're like, oh. And they come up, and it's my dad. And he's like, you know, you probably could have made it, but why don't you guys jump in, and we'll go home. And we're like, thanks, Dad. That'll work just fine. So we jump in. We go back. Mom has a big dinner for us and a big water. And we all survived it. But at the end of the day, it probably wasn't a great decision, right? However, I have an amazing story to tell now. Did you guys enjoy that story? Okay. So part of this dopamine, in that process, there was some natural dopamine release that was amazing. We had this incredible adventure. We went on this great quest. And we were outside and we were doing this really, really difficult, hard thing. Now, would I let my 6- and 4-year-old do the same thing now? I don't know. Part of me thinks maybe, but maybe not. Right? I don't know. But the idea, you guys, is we've got to get outside and we've got to do things that challenge us. We want these natural dopamine highs and we've got to pursue those things. We got to get after it. We, as a civilization, as a culture, we spend way, way too much time inside now compared to what we used to. And I'm not suggesting you go out and kill yourselves doing that. But what I am suggesting is, and listening to this very carefully, you guys, this is an important topic. I want you to do dangerous things carefully. Okay? So when your mom says, when you're climbing a tree, for you, some of you younger ones, you older guys are too old. Oh, we don't climb trees anymore. We're too cool. I love to climb trees. But for you younger guys that still love to climb trees, when mom's like, get out of that tree, you're going to kill yourself. You'd be like, Mom, Nephi said,
if I do it carefully, that I should be doing dangerous things. Okay? And I want you to use that because I want you doing dangerous things carefully. There's a natural dopamine high in that that is very, very, very healthy. And it's so much better than the artificial dopamine that we get from other things. And as you give yourself these natural highs, you'll have less inclination to do some of that other crap that doesn't benefit you in any way. Whereas this is amazing. You'll have incredible stories of doing crazy, amazing things. And I'm not talking about like just canyoneering trips. I'm saying on a daily basis, what are you doing to get outside and do something dangerous carefully? If you're climbing a tree carefully, then go do it. If you're going to race your motorcycle, that's fine. Put a helmet on and go do it. Break your leg and get it fixed and come back and do it again. Like, that's the process. That's what we want here. We want to do dangerous things carefully. I don't want anybody to die, but I want you to be careful. I would love a couple of broken bones and some good scars. All right? And if you get some of those things, come tell me the story because I really, really want to hear it. But we want to do dangerous things carefully. I think I had a hand over here. Did I have a question over here in the hat? Did you have your hand up?
Why didn't Andy just went cliff jumping when we saw the lake?
Yeah, 1,000 feet that was like a mile away. It would have been a good jump. Maybe with a good run as a 6-year-old, I could have made it. Knowing myself, I might have tried if my brothers hadn't been there. So it's good. All right, so get out and do dangerous things carefully. Number three, I guess. Reset, do dangerous things carefully. Number three, and you guys are not going to like this. How many of you guys feel bored sometimes? Okay. What do we naturally do when we feel bored? What's our natural thing? Most of you who have devices, I bet most of you can't even sit like 5 minutes with your device and not pick it up. Am I accurate? I can't. I can't even go to the bathroom without my device. Like, if I'm going to sit in the bathroom, I'm like, I better take my device. I don't know what I'm going to do in there. Here's the thing. Research has demonstrated that we need to be bored more often. Boredom is the beginning of great creativity. And so we need to sit more often and be a little bit bored. And so, and next time you're feeling bored, don't reach for your device. Just sit in the boredom. And if you sit in the boredom, your mind will turn on in a different way. It's not going to be this dopamine release that you're wanting. It's going to be a better process that's going to create something new and novel, right? I'm sure that my adventure into the hills of Moab probably started with me being bored. And we're like, we should just go up there, right? So those are the types of things. You've got to sit in your boredom more often. Be okay with boredom. Don't go to your mom and be like, I'm bored. Can I watch a movie? No, just sit in your boredom for a little bit. There's benefits in that. All right, does anybody remember this experiment? Have you seen this before? Raise your hand. The marshmallow experiment. Okay, so this is such an awesome experiment. So what they did, this is a very famous experiment. They took kids and they put them in a room with a marshmallow on a plate. And they said, we're going to leave. And we're going to leave you with this marshmallow. If you eat it now, feel free to eat it now. You can have it right now if you want to. Or if you can wait 10 minutes, then when I come back, I'll give you 3 additional marshmallows. Okay? So he's sitting there. This is actual. They've reproduced this study over and over, right? And so this is an actual kid. You can see his progression. It's like he's sitting here like, oh, I'm not going to eat that marshmallow. Nope. He's like, oh, what if nobody finds out? And now he's really struggling with it. Now he's picking it up, smelling it. Right? Like he's like, oh, maybe if I just smell it, it'll give me enough of the everything. And then he looks around like, is anybody watching? And eventually, he eats the marshmallow. Okay. What would you guys do?
Wait.
Eat. Wait. Eat. Here's something, yeah. Hey, flip the plate over to cover it up, right? That's a good idea. Get rid of the temptation because you want those other marshmallows. Okay, some of you guys don't even like marshmallows, right? You'd be like, I don't want it at all. Here's the point of this study. What they did afterwards was interesting. They followed these individual students for the next 20 years of their lives. So every year for 20 years, they had them fill out an assessment of their happiness, what they were doing, like some of their career successes,
all of those different kinds of things. And they found something really, really interesting. They found that the students that could wait for the extra marshmallows had significantly higher outcomes and successes in their lives. They just became happier people. Now, why is that? Because this idea of self-denial, this idea that you don't have to have everything right now, is really, really powerful and beneficial in our lives. Now, you are growing up in, again, generation dopamine, right? You're growing up in a world where everybody is trying to give you everything right this second. It's an immediate response. If you get on a device or you go to a, you go to Disney, you can immediately get exactly what you want right now. You guys, this will sound crazy to you. There used to be a time that when a new movie came out, if you didn't see it in theaters, you had to wait for it to, like, months and months and months and months. You couldn't just go to video on demand. You had to wait a long, long time. And then you got super excited and you went and you pulled your money together as kids and you went down to the video store and rented the video, right? Like, there was a natural processes. We had natural processes in place that we had self-denial. But now you guys don't. It's everything right now at your fingertips in every single way. That's hugely, hugely detrimental to you. And we need to be better at practicing some level of self-denial. And specifically, since we're talking about devices and dopamine, when it comes to devices and those things that like spike that dopamine for us, we need to work on that process of self-denial. So I don't know what that looks for you. I don't know how you would do that exactly, right? But I've asked you already, let's do a reset. Let's do a two-week reset on devices. And as you come back to devices, you may want to consider, hey, I'll look at my device like a little bit each day or every other day or something. I don't know. Again, I don't know what your process would look like. But this idea of denying yourself access to it constantly is hugely powerful. All right. How much time do I have? Seven? Six? Five? 7 minutes. I don't mean to keep doing that. Like, I really don't. this is in Africa. So a few years ago, I decided that I wanted to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Mount Kilimanjaro is the highest peak in Africa. And in fact, from the base of where it starts at sea level, like the mountain starts at sea level, and then rises to almost 20,000 feet. So it's 19,600 and something feet. It's the tallest mountain in the world in that sense. Like Everest is significantly higher, but Everest starts at like 12,000 feet and then goes to 29. This one starts at zero and goes to 19,000. And so it's an amazing adventure. We did it in a six day adventure. And we started out day one at almost the base of the mountain. And we're in the jungle. And then over the course of those 6 days, we hike over 60 miles up and around Mount Kilimanjaro to get to this point. This is the last night. We arrived at this point. Up here on top, that's not actually the peak. The peak is back behind there. But we have to go straight up. You guys can kind of see a trail right here. We got to go up that trail that next day. So we get to this point. And we have a group of us together. We've been going all week. In order to climb to these high mountains, you have to acclimate your body because there's not enough oxygen. And so every day we would climb up. So we started at zero. We climbed up to like 10,000 feet. And then we descended back to 8,000 feet and slept. And then we'd climb up the next day to 15,000 feet. And we'd descend back to 12 and sleep. And so we did this up and down and up and down throughout the course of the week to get our bodies used to the amount of oxygen that there was. And so we're at this point. And we stopped in the afternoon, we had a meal, and then they said, go to bed. Because what we were going to do is we were going to sleep for a few hours, and we're going to wake up at midnight to start our ascent. Because if you wake up at midnight and you climb, then right when you get to the peak of Kilimanjaro, the sun rises over the Serengeti. And it's like this incredible experience. And so our group is ready. It was me and some of my friends, a couple of their kids. And not everybody had the same preparation for this trip. We start up, we get up at midnight, we have a small meal, and we start making our way up this. This is a 3,000-foot climb
over the course of just 3 kilometers. So it's it's very steep. And here's how you climb Mount Kilimanjaro, by the way. So for this entire week, here's what we did. That's the pace of climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. And if you go any faster, the guides are like, pole, pole. Slowly, slowly. Like they will slow you down. And so we started pole, pole up to the top of Kilimanjaro. And it was difficult. We got up about 1,000 feet, and one of the ladies in our group was just overcut, like she couldn't breathe. She sat down, and she passed out for a minute, and we got her revived. And then the guide said, you guys keep going, and we'll keep her here with us. And so we kept going. And we get up a little bit farther, and then two of the three teenagers we were with stopped. They couldn't go any farther either. And so they sit down, and the guide said, you guys go on, we'll stay with them. So now we've abandoned some of our group, and we're just continuing up. Well, we get right up to the top of this. And by the way, I thought that was the top. So we get to this point. It's called Stella Point, 18,885 feet. And we're like, dude, we're done. And the guy's like, no. No, we actually got to go quite a ways. We got to go all the way up and get all the way to the top of that. So we're sitting there at the top thinking, man, I don't know if I can go any farther. Like most of our group was just exhausted. It's so hard to breathe and couldn't move. But everybody, and so we're kind of like, a couple of the guys are like, I don't know. The guy that had the kids down the hill, he's like, maybe I should go back and get my kids. I don't know if we're going to make it. You guys go on. And then we look down and we see the two kids and the one woman that we left behind. They're making their way up to the top. And so we wait for about 15 minutes and they all get there. And we're all just like, all right, we can do this. We can make it. And so we continued on and we made our way around the crater. There's a big crater right here. Made our way around the crater to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro at 341. I said 600 feet. 19,341 feet, the highest point in Africa. And you guys, it was insane. The sun came up over the Serengeti, and it was beautiful. And there was just this sense of incredible accomplishment. Okay?
Which one are you?
I am right back here.
Oh, yeah.
It's cold, right? Remember, we started at sea level in the jungle, and now we're up in a glacier with, like, our water bottles as we walked froze completely. So we couldn't even have water for a period of time because our water bottles are so frozen. I'm not telling you this as like, oh, wow, Nephi, that's cool. The point of this is one of the greatest things you can do to fight this dopamine generation is to do amazing things in your lives, to set amazing, crazy hard goals. Go out and do something hard that actually matters, that will actually be interesting to you. And stop wasting your time and stop giving your brains to these companies who are taking advantage of you. We have to break out of this, you guys. This is a huge, huge concern for your generation. You truly are generation dopamine. But you don't have to be. And that's the point of this, is that if you want to, you can break out of it. You can choose to live differently. By the way, you guys are homeschoolers. You're already weird, so why don't you be a little weirder, right? Like, let's break out of it. Like, let's be a little more weird and do amazing weird things, because that's where all the good things happen in the world. Did you guys know nothing great has ever been done by somebody that's just normal and average? It's all the weird guys that get all the great things done. And you guys are those people. And so steer into the weirdness. Be a little weird in different ways. Don't be the device user. Just be like, they're like, where's your phone? Be like, I don't have a phone. Or like, pull out your old flip phone and be like, they're like, what is that? Are you poor? Like, no, dude, this is, I don't want dopamine in my life. And if I need to call somebody, I'll use this and that's it. Be unique. Don't fall into this trap that you have to be involved with everything. If you don't know what the latest trend on TikTok is, congratulations, you're winning in life. Okay? Be different. Get out of this dopamine. It is not helping. It is not blessing your life. And I'm very serious about that. Steer into the weirdness and do great things and accomplish amazing things that you'll have to be able to stand in front of people and tell great stories. All right? Thank you, guys. I appreciate you today.